Good morning. You're listening to the KPCW Local News Hour. It is news time 8:16. This morning, our first guest, Lincoln Schurz, is the Director of External Relations for the Utah Association of Counties. My understanding is, Lincoln, you talked with County Council last Thursday and discussed some of the topics that involved a new transportation bill, a possible tax increase of 0.20%, and maybe you could give us a little bit of an update on all this.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks for having me on this morning. So, like you said, I met with the Summit County Council last Thursday and talked to them about Senate Bill 136, which passed this year at the Utah State Legislature. And in Senate Bill 136, it gave counties the option to impose a 0.25% sales tax, an additional 0.25% sales tax, for the purposes of supporting transit, transportation, and multimodal transportation, so trails, hiking, biking, as well as traditional transportation, which would include your roads or transit systems. So essentially, on every $100 purchase, you'd be looking at about one quarter more to that purchase price that would support those infrastructure demands that we have in the state of Utah.
And how receptive do you feel counties have been? I mean, have you been in touch at least preliminarily with the other county leaders throughout the state?
Yeah. So we as the Association of Counties, have our conference this week where we'll be meeting with all counties. But as we've been going out individually, most counties recognizing the substantial economic growth we're experiencing here in the state of Utah also recognize the needs we have in terms of supporting that growth with infrastructure demands. So most counties seem to be supportive. The way that the tax is imposed is the county can just simply impose the tax by a resolution or ordinance of the county council. And it appears that many of the counties, primarily along the Wasatch Front, will be moving forward with that increase.
So if a county wanted to, prior to this bill, impose a tax increase, it would have to go into a ballot type of arrangement. Is that correct?
That is correct. So, yeah, prior to this year's legislation, they would have had to go out to the voters to increase this tax that we're talking about today. The legislature, in an effort to encourage counties and cities to impose the tax, really recognizing the needs we have for our local transportation, has said, you know what, you don't have to go out to the voters. What some counties are doing, and I would expect this to be a trend that you'll see throughout the state, is they're asking the cities within the county to pass resolutions encouraging the county to impose the tax, because the revenue is split between the cities, the counties, and the transit system within those counties that do have transit systems. So there will be a revenue sharing, and in essence, a way in which they're trying to make sure that they have broad support from the communities in which they serve as the county. They're asking those cities to pass resolutions as well.
Okay, and would counties be instituting this by July? And if so, would they be able to keep revenues from that first year, or?
Yeah, so the way the tax was orchestrated through the legislation is if they impose between July 1 of 2018 and July 1 of 2019, the county gets to keep all of the revenue for that first calendar year. After the first calendar year, it goes into a revenue sharing where it's essentially 0.1 of the 0.25 goes to the cities, 0.1 of the 0.25 goes to support transit, and then 0.05 countywide goes to support county transportation needs. So that's going to be the revenue share post July 1, 2019.
Okay. And what about if there aren't necessarily specific plans yet outlined? Is this something that there's a timeline that has to be pretty much laid out?
So the county does not have, in the legislation, there is no requirement to have transportation plans put together. Traditionally, what counties are doing is relying on their area metropolitan planning organization. So for Summit County, that would be Mountain Lands Association of Governments, to help them identify the needs that they have, whether it be in maintenance and operation needs or new capacity needs, and then take that information that's created through the MPO and use that as kind of the baseline for supporting those transportation projects.
Okay, and then also we could set up another tax of 0.20%?
So, starting on July 1 of 2019, so a year from now essentially, the county can also impose a 0.2. So if they were to impose the 0.25 this year plus the 0.2 next year, you'd be looking at roughly a half-cent sales tax increase. And the 0.2 that can be imposed after July 1 of 2019 is specific for transit needs. And so what I anticipate is, because we have many counties throughout the state who don't have transit systems, they won't be imposing this tax. Because of the high demand for additional transit service primarily along the Wasatch Front. I would anticipate a lot of the Wasatch Front communities do impose that tax. It seemed up in the air in Summit County. I don't know if they really, because they had just heard about it on Thursday, really had a time to think about whether or not they were going to impose that additional .2 to support Park City Transit, which would be an allowable use under the law.
Sure. So also passed an increase on registration fees for alternative fuel vehicles. What's the reasoning behind this?
Well, the nexus behind this, and again, the legislature was trying to support transportation. Right now, if you look at the total of number of registered alternative fuel vehicles, it's not that many. So total collection on the additional registration fee statewide is going to be about $150,000 to $200,000. For all alternative fuel vehicles statewide. So it's not a massive increase. However, we're starting to see cars move more towards fuel-efficient vehicles and obviously alternative fuel vehicles. And with that, because the bulk of our funding for transportation maintenance and operation is through the gas tax, identifying how we're going to fund those maintenance and operation needs going forward as cars become more fuel-efficient or move away from gasoline is becoming a larger issue for the state of Utah. So the way in which, at least in the near term, they're looking to address that is by increasing the registration fee, kind of as a proxy for what they would have otherwise paid in the gas tax. It doesn't necessarily mirror what they would have paid in gas tax if they were a traditionally fueled vehicle, but it's a decent proxy for the time being until they determine a new funding structure going forward that will support our roads.
Okay. And the state is allowing same-day voter registration. How will our county clerk or any county clerk be affected by this? They also apparently want to update some election equipment this year.
Yeah.
Is there funding for this? How will this proceed?
Yeah, this was a really big effort for the counties this year. So if you remember back in the early 2000s through an act of Congress, they passed the Help America Vote Act, which supported the funding of new elections equipment and the electronic election equipment we're using today. That's now about 10 to 15 years old. So it was time to do kind of a refresh. And the way in which we administer elections has changed. We've gone mostly to mail-in elections versus coming to a polling location. And so with that, we're updating the elections equipment and the counting equipment. The Association of Counties was successful in getting the necessary funding to do a statewide refresh of all that election equipment with a cost of about $10 million for all of the statewide election needs. So that was one piece of the bill. In addition to that, we passed both same-day voter registration and automatic voter registration. So twofold. One is if you go and renew your driver's license, now it will automatically update your information if you were to change your address. It will update that information and automatically send it to the clerk. So a nice way to just save costs by kind of limiting the amount of times you have to touch government to keep your voter registration information updated. And then secondarily, it allows for same-day voter registration. So in the offhand chance you have moved or something has changed, or you thought you were registered and simply weren't, if you were to go to a polling location and try to vote, they would register you on the spot and allow you to vote in that election. So those are two big changes that I think will just increase voter participation, which Utah has always been lagging in. And so hopefully with some of these measures, we'll increase the voter participation here in the state of Utah and continue to allow democracy to flourish, if you will.
Sure. And there's a House Bill 175 from Kevin Stratton from this last session that would have set up an oversight committee that could have investigated actions by local government. What happened to this bill? I know Summit County and probably many other counties were very opposed to this. What's the story on that?
Yeah, so the bill essentially would have created an oversight committee similar to the federal oversight committee, which was really an investigatory committee. It was being championed as a bill that would allow the state to audit local governments. But in fact, what the bill did is really allow them to second-guess any legislative action of a county, city, school board, or special district. And so, as you can imagine, all of those different local governmental entities expressed some concern that this was just an opportunity for the legislature to usurp the legislative power of local government and second-guess everything we're doing on the local level. This is a significant issue for Summit County because, as you can imagine, the politics in Summit County often are different than those of the state legislature. And so recognizing that this would have just created an opportunity to second-guess what was happening in those local jurisdictions, which was a huge concern and something we fought to oppose and ultimately were successful in making sure did not pass the legislature this year.
Yeah. Do you see it coming back next year?
You know, as I told the Summit County Council, I think there is a growing trend that the legislature wants to be more engaged in a lot of the local decisions that are taking place. Right now in the state, we're experiencing such high growth, and local governments are charged with dealing with that growth. And so I think you're going to see the legislature continue to try and engage at a level which we find inappropriate at the local level. And I would anticipate something similar to this in the years to come, certainly.
Sure. And SB 191 from Kevin Van Tassel, who's retiring this year, this said that if a local government has a conflict with an energy business, the issue will be settled by the Division of Oil, Gas, and Mining. Summit County is concerned specifically about the Tesoro pipeline idea, if that comes back. And this did pass the legislature and was signed by the governor. Can you talk about the reasoning behind that?
Yeah, so it was an attempt to do kind of a technical cleanup and really define who had jurisdiction under which practices. Under current state law, the concept is the state has jurisdiction for what are called the downhole activities. So essentially, the way in which you extract the natural gas or the oil from the ground is under the purview of the Division of Oil and Gas and Mining. What is of the purview of local government is the local land use adjacent to or ancillary to the oil and gas operation. And so what we wanted to do is just clarify that distinction between the downhole activities and the surface level activities. In doing so, and in large part just because it's a quick legislative session, we didn't do it well. And essentially, there was a provision in there that says that the transportation of the natural gas or oil is the purview of the Division of Oil and Gas and Mining. What is the question is whether or not the transport through a pipeline is now under the purview of DOGGM, which it traditionally has not been. And so there will be an effort to clean that up. We met with the division and stakeholders for the petroleum industry on Friday. Everyone's of the same mindset that should clearly be the purview of local government. We just missed it in the wording. So anticipate either a special session or something to clean it up in a general session in 2019. But we are on it, and it seems like all stakeholders are interested in kind of rebalancing the way we had traditionally thought that was a local government purview issue.
Sure. Okay. And then Mike Noel of CNAB had a bill that would have said that local governments can't endorse a federal land designation without permission of the state legislature. And this would actually target Mountain Accord, among other things. What happened to this bill?
Like you said, I mean, that clearly the intent of this bill was to address what was happening with the Mountain Accord. All the stakeholders involved in that one were successful in killing the bill and not allowing it to pass. I don't anticipate we'll see a bill like this moving forward. The sentiment was pretty clear in the legislature, primarily in the Senate, that there wasn't a lot of interest in this issue. And the ability for local governments to seek a federal designation clearly was stated by the legislature as something that they wanted to be maintained as a local effort. So that bill didn't pass, and I don't think we're going to see much like it in the future, especially with Mike Noel's retirement this year.
Okay. And then finally, the county, on the issue of short-term rentals, where companies are not passing the transient room taxes for rentals, it looks like only Airbnb is doing it. What's happening with this?
So this is an interesting issue where Airbnb and some of the VRBO and some of the others that help as a place in which an individual can do a short-term rental, some of those companies are claiming that it's not their obligation to collect the tax on behalf of the actual unit owner. It's the owner's responsibility to collect that tax, and so they're not collecting and remitting on behalf of the owner. Airbnb is. Summit County asked us to work with the State Tax Commission to enhance enforcement on these types of rentals to ensure the tax is being paid, obviously using the facilitator, either VRBO or Airbnb, makes that process of enforcement a lot easier. They're already tracking that data as to who's rented their unit, so we would love to have them act as an agent and collect the tax on behalf of the unit owner. Otherwise, the tax commission is required to go unit by unit and collect that tax and enforce the collection of that tax, which makes it a little bit cumbersome. As you can imagine, the magnitude of rentals that are taking place, a lot easier to do it through a single place like VRBO versus having to go to each individual unit owner to collect the tax.
Sure. Okay. And any predictions on who you think we'll see as leadership next year?
Boy, if I could guess that, I'd be doing a lot better than I am. there's a lot of things going on in terms of leadership. Some of the big races, obviously in the House, I think things are relatively well settled. It looks like Brad Wilson, who is the current majority leader, is going to be running for Speaker. He represents Davis County. Francis Gibson, who represents Mapleton in Utah County, looks like he's going to be moving up and trying to run for majority leader as well. So those are pretty easy ones. I don't know what sort of challengers they're going to get, but those two have essentially announced that they're going to be running. On the Senate side, Stuart Adams, Senator Stuart Adams, who represents Davis, Weaver County, and has worked quite a bit with Summit County, looks like he'll be running for Senate president. Hasn't been formally announced yet, but that's what everyone's anticipating. And then Evan Vickers, Senator from Cedar City, looks like he'll be running for a leadership position as well. A lot of other names out there being circulated. No formal announcements have taken place on any of these yet. But that gives you at least an indication of some of the folks that we can anticipate running for leadership next year.
Sure. People to watch for. So the UAC is meeting in St. George this week, and it sounds like that's getting started up today, this morning?
I am flying down today. So, yeah, okay. We've got all of the counties and all of the city leaders meeting in St. George all of this week. So it'll be a great day for and a great week for local government to get together, recap the session, and start strategizing about 2019 and some of the efforts ahead. So
thanks, Lincoln. Okay. Appreciate it. Have fun
Absolutely.
Down there.
Have a good day.
Bye-bye.
Thanks.
You're listening to the KPCW Local News Hour. I'm Carolyn Murray. It's 8:33, and we have Bob Wheaton. He is the president and general manager of Deer Valley. He is in the studio this morning. Welcome, Bob. Thanks for coming in.
Well, thank you, Carolyn. How are you this morning?
I'm good. How about you?
Perfect.
Yeah. Okay. So how about here we are, another season. How does
here
that
we are.
Happen?
Oh, yeah.
It's too much. It goes too fast. But another season, it's over. Deer Valley's closed, I imagine, waiting for some snow to melt.
A little bit, yeah. We are, so winter season is behind us, as you just said, Carolyn, and we're getting ready for summer. Actually started getting ready for summer even before we closed with plans and getting equipment together and all that because we have a really busy summer ahead of us.
Yeah, so what kind of plans are there as far as construction or new equipment or new services, that type of thing?
Well, we are... we're looking at some new snowcats and snowmobiles. We're going to replace the homestake lift with a detachable quad, so that'll be a big project this summer. And then we're also going to build a blue-rated, if you will, an intermediate-rated flow trail from Silver Lake all the way down to Snow Park, and that's just over 4 miles. So as soon as the snow melts, as you said, we'll be getting on that because that's going to be a huge project as well.
Oh, yeah. Flow trail for mountain biking.
Correct.
Oh, yeah.
Correct.
That's fantastic.
So, you know, mountain biking has been very good to us, as they say. And so we just want to continue to provide our guests with the experience that they've come to expect. And here we go.
Yeah. Okay. Well, let's kind of wrap up the season. How did things work? I know it was a light snow year. You and I had talked at some point mid season, and you were singing the praises of your amazing staff and how technically competent so many of the snowmaking people and the groomers and just how much you depend on them during a year like this. But talk a little bit about how it ended up for Deer Valley.
And none of that changed all the way through the season, Carolyn. It, you know, kudos goes out to every single person on staff in every single department. As it turns out, we had about 41% of the snow that we had the previous year. Now, as we all know, the previous year was kind of okay on the snow side. But yeah, 41%, and it was late. You know, the snow that we did receive was late, so we were really challenged early season. And boy, that's when everybody just kind of put their shoulder down and got with it. And you know, whether it's snowmaking, grooming, food and beverage, lodging, you know, you name it, everybody just really pitched in to get the job done. And what we saw throughout the season was our guests that came to us, whether it's nationally, internationally, or locally, and they'd ride up the chair and they'd look over in the woods and see the branches and the grass and all that. and skiing was outstanding. And the comments that we got time and time again was, gee, you know, I really didn't expect the skiing to be this good, but it's really good, and everybody is so happy and so friendly, and how do you do it?
Yeah.
So just kudos to everybody on staff.
Well, good. Good on you. So how was the business? As far as it's probably not a record breaker, but business-wise, do you have numbers yet in for the winter?
We're still compiling the final numbers, Carolyn, but we can say that this has been a very good season. It's not a record season, but it's right up there. And this is one of those years that we would take anytime. So we had a good, strong season in the end. You know, we were fortunate the way spring break ended up the latter part of the season. We got three really strong spring break weeks that just kind of rolled through the country. And then the last week that we were open, you know, locally a lot of people were out of school. So we saw a lot of benefit from how spring break fell.
Yeah, yeah. And we also, that was sort of when we got our snow.
Yes,
during
exactly.
That time frame. So.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, that snow thing.
That snow.
Yeah, that always kind of helps.
Remember that. Yeah, so we've heard that there may be some trails starting to be cut over with the new Mayflower Extel development area. Is that happening this summer?
That's
rumored?
I doubt if it's going to happen this summer.
Oh, okay.
The project itself is definitely moving forward. There's a fair amount of planning effort and infrastructure and all that needs to go into it. And it's definitely moving.
So what kinds of things will be happening over on that side of the mountain then this?
Oh, we'll see some planning and some approvals over there this summer. I know there's still some pretty finite discussions with MIDA, the Military Installation Development Authority, about the military hotel over there, and that will really help kick things off. So we'll see some planning, and maybe sometime in the fall, moving some dirt around at the bottom, but, you know, we'll see about timing.
So give some of us a little visual on this. If you're driving on 40, State Route 40, and you come to the Mayflower exit, is this the area that we're talking about, or does it wrap around kind of south of that?
No, that is the area right around the exit and south of that. And then and for this particular development, Carolyn, it's on the resort side of Highway 40. And there's a ridge that runs to the east. That is Big Dutch Peak and Little Dutch Peak. And it's on the north side of that ridge. And then from there, the whole development goes from there all the way to the bottom of the gondola. So there are a couple of large pieces of property in there. And the collective planning effort is happening right now.
Okay. Let's talk about concert plans. People mm-hmm. are talking and wondering what. So Park City Institute is not there any longer, or will not be performing their concerts there. What happened with that? Why has there been a change? They've been doing that for years.
Well, we just have been talking for a while, and we saw an opportunity to have Deer Valley's own oriented concert series in concert, if you will, with the symphony. And so it'll be a more coordinated effort now, and we're very excited. Unfortunately, today we're not in a position to talk about the lineup, but I can tell you that we're very excited about the lineup. We were challenged previously with how many dates the venue was occupied, and then also with the attendance given the programming.
So as far as the dates go, I know, do you plan to have more frequent performances, something similar more to the Red Butte schedule where there maybe are two, three performances a week, that kind of thing? Or
actually, it's the other way around, Carolyn. What when we looked at partnership with the city, when we looked at the toll on the venue and how many dates we had, it's really going to be a lot more efficient to actually have less dates with shows that have a larger draw.
Okay. Now, the Red Butte promoters, are they the same promoters that will be working with Deer Valley?
Correct.
And bringing in?
That's okay. Correct.
Okay.
Yes.
So, and you're not going to give us any hints at all?
No. Sorry.
We'll have to do a little arm twisting.
Yeah, there you go.
Maybe the
there
next time. When do you expect you're going to be able to give us some information on that? When? I mean, you've already announced the symphony lineup.
Correct.
But what's the timing on that?
We're thinking probably 2 weeks, 2.5 weeks maybe.
Okay.
Something like that.
And
so pretty shortly.
What's the start date? Is it June that you start to bring in the acts?
The latter part of, very end of June, first part of July.
Oh, okay.
And again, a lot of that comes to the venue. And, last year we just, we saw the condition of the venue deteriorate, meaning the grass and all that kind of stuff. So we're looking at some updates this year with restroom facilities. As a, for instance, we need to give the grass, it comes down to the grass and the water, we need to give the venue time to rest, because in the past there were just too many concerts and the venue didn't have a time to rest. So this year we're looking at that series. We're looking at the symphony and then the ever popular Wednesday concerts as well.
Right, I was going to ask about that. So that's still a go.
Oh yeah,
for Deer Valley.
Yep.
Yeah. Well, that's quite a schedule right there. If you just look at every Wednesday,
we're going to have a very, very full summer.
Yeah. Well, we're excited to hear what's coming up next. So, anything else, Bob, that you want to talk about before we wrap this up?
I think I'd really like to take the opportunity to thank everybody in town. And, first of all, thank the staff at Deer Valley for yet another outstanding winter season and an anticipatory, if you will, thank you for this summer, because, as I mentioned, a lot of that effort is going on right now. And then I'd also like to take the opportunity to thank everybody in town. The support that everybody provides to Deer Valley Resort is just over the top, and I'd just like to be sure that everybody knows how much it's appreciated from the resort side and from all of us on staff. The partnership with everybody in town and certainly Park City Municipal is just over the top. One of the tough parts of my job is that I have to go out and look at other ski resorts and other towns and all that, and I can say that there's truly nothing like Park City. There really isn't. The support that the citizens give to both resorts, and I know I can speak for Bill Rock and Park City Mountain Resort as well. The relationship that Park City Mountain Resort and Deer Valley have, it typically doesn't happen. And it has to do with people, it has to do with relationships, and has to do with respect. And we just truly appreciate being here in Park City, speaking for Deer Valley Resort. And would just like to say thank you, a very sincere thank you.
Okay. Thank you so much, Bob, for coming in.
Thank you, Kevin.
Bye now. Good morning. This is the KPCW Local News Hour. News time is 8:47. My next guest is Brantley Eason. He's the Summit County Republican Chair. He's in with us today to talk about the state convention held on Saturday. And if anyone's read the paper or listened to reports, it was quite an undertaking. I understand it was long. It was somewhat, fairly contentious. And it was filled with a lot of excitement. So can you talk to us about just what your overall impressions were with the convention this time around?
Absolutely. Thank you for having me on. It was a long day. We started with a couple of early votes, especially for Utah Senate District 26. We had a vote that started about 8 o'clock. So started about 7:30 to get registered, and we had our votes at 8, and then the convention started at 11, and we went into the early evening. So a lot of people there. We have, I think there was about 4,000 total state delegates this year. So a lot of people there, and you have a lot of opinions with a lot of people. So a lot of dialogue, discussion, and things did get heated once or twice. But it was a fun day. It was a good day for sure.
Yeah, so Senate District 26 is Kevin Van Tassel's seat. He's retiring. And there were three candidates that will now be on the ballot in June on the primary.
That's correct. There is Jack Rubin. Brian Gorham and Ron Winterton are the three that will be on the primary in June.
Okay, and that's not always common to have three on the primary.
It's not. Typically, you'll see two, but this year we've got three.
So there was a lot of discussion about party rules. That kind of went into some long sessions and discussions. The delegates, give us a little bit of a rundown on that. There were some behavior things happening. People really, you know, criticizing others for helping to sweep up the confetti. And I mean, people yelling at, you know, Senator Hatch, goodbye, it's time to go. Do you think that was productive, or was it just sort of part of the process?
Well, it is part of the process, but at the same time, everyone needs to be respectful. So like I said, out of 4,000 people that attend, it only takes a couple people just to yell out and make a disturbance. It's how it is anywhere. You go to a local basketball game and it's the same type of thing. It's but a smaller scale. So a lot of rules and discussion on the rules at the very beginning. They have to be adopted by a majority vote. And so when you've got thousands of people talking about the rules and how they want to see things proceed, it can take a little while to have that discussion and get through it.
Yeah. So not too much of a surprise that Mitt Romney and Mike Kennedy are going into a pretty closely contested primary. It looks like Mitt Romney did not win the delegate majority.
It was really close. I think it was 49% to 51% of the delegates. So Mike Kennedy ended up with 51% on the final round. And so they'll be going to a primary in June as well.
So, yeah. And I guess Mike Kennedy was at last week's local GOP convention in Camas. Mitt Romney sent a spokesperson. What was the sense like there? Did you feel like it was a 50-50 kind of split at that?
I think it was. It felt that way just from the discussions going around. So it did feel really close. It wasn't too surprising to see it come out that close. And so now it goes to the primary for to be opened up to the general, I guess, Republican population.
My colleague Rick Bruff wanted me to insert the irony of another contest with Mitt and a Kennedy.
So I had
to throw that one
very
in.
Very true.
So John Curtis, he won in the special election covering Jason Chaffetz's seat,
yes,
who resigned last June, I believe it was. And so he also will be going into a primary with Chris Herod.
That's correct.
But John Curtis came away with a more substantial delegate support.
He was over 50%. I can't remember the exact numbers, but he was really close to the 60%. Didn't actually come across the line there. So that's going to go down to another primary. So we've got a handful of primaries here.
Yeah. And was that a surprise, or did you think he was going to maybe take that one at 60%?
No, that wasn't too much of a surprise. He's only been in for about 5 or 6 months, and so it's still, I'd say he doesn't have a foothold like another elected official would have that's been in there for a full term even. And so it's not too surprising.
So let's clarify that under those conditions, if Mitt Romney and if John Curtis did not have the signatures, it would have been, well, John Curtis would have still made it into the primary, but Mitt Romney would not have.
Well, he would have made it through. He does have the signature, so he was an automatic bid to the primary. It just comes down to the final vote on that 60%. So if someone had either Romney or Kennedy had obtained the 60% in that final vote, then there would not have been a primary coming out of convention there. But since neither one of them got this, the 60%, so they were off, both candidates were off by about 10% of the vote, which they needed.
Okay. I'm going to put you on the spot. Okay. There's big party conflict over the caucus convention system and whether it will ever get settled. And people, in the Republican Party, some are very supportive of, 54, House Bill 54, which gives the opportunity for people to use the signature process, and then others are very opposed to it. Mm-hmm. Where do you and where do Summit County Republicans stand on that, or can you even answer that question?
Well, the party prefers the caucus convention system. It's just what we've had, and it's the rules that we have in place. We do follow the law, and since Senate Bill 54 has been passed, then we follow the law. And so we allow the signatures to take place. And until anything has changed, that's the way we move forward.
Yeah. So but if we get down to the, you know, if the party supports the caucus convention system, that involves then the question of, is that in touch with what the general Republican population of Utah feels? Because, you know, if Romney beats Kennedy and if Curtis beats Herod, does that prove that the delegates that are going to the convention are out of touch with what the popular?
I would say it's the exact opposite. I would say that the system is working perfectly. If the delegates cannot agree, what you don't want is something to be so close that it turns into a big fight, as far as, like we saw with Romney and Kennedy, 51-49, that's really close. And so what the system is basically saying is, since it's so close, there isn't a vast majority winner that will put it out to the primary. So I believe it's working perfectly. It's exactly how the system is supposed to work.
It is, because the signatures are available still. The signature path is still available.
Well, not necessarily, because they can go the way the rules are at the 60% is to have that vast majority of delegates that agree on a specific candidate. So if the delegates don't have that majority, the vast majority that agree on a candidate, then they put it out towards the rest of the party to decide in the primary. And so I think it's working perfectly. I think that's,
so you think that 60% is magic then?
I think it's a good number. I think it's a good number.
Right. Okay. And what about getting this settled from a legal perspective? Is there were some efforts underway to take districts 1 and 2 and discount using signatures to get on the ballot. That was not that was overturned, apparently, or the motion was made against that effort. What's happening with that? Will the Republican Party proceed with a lawsuit and take that on an appeal, or?
So last I heard is that the district court came back on a 2-1 vote against the Republican Party's lawsuit. And the party put in for an appeal, and it looks like that appeal will be heard by the entire all the judges involved. It was, like I said, it was heard by 3 judges, and I think it's going to go back to the full court to be heard. So we'll see how that goes.
So philosophically, what's the downside of allowing for people to get on the ballot based on signatures? Why would that be a threat to a democratic system, a democratic process like ours?
I wouldn't say it's necessarily a threat, but what it is the party is a private, or it's its own organization. And for an organization to say, these are the rules that we want to install, this is how we want to govern ourselves, and then to have an outside entity come in and say, that's great, but we're going to change your own rules and not allow you to do what you want and how you want to do it, I think that's the big argument there.
Okay, but the Democrats, they have their rules as well. Mm-hmm. And their rules would have to allow for those signatures.
Yes, so they're under the same system. So they use the caucus convention system as well. And with SB 54, it's the same path. If you want to collect signatures, you can as well.
But they're not suing. But they're not suing to repeal that.
No, they've not brought forth a lawsuit.
Yeah, they're less concerned. So we had a guest on last week from Primary Out, a fellow named Greg Schultz. He's mm-hmm. a self-proclaimed Republican. Mm-hmm. He started a grassroots effort to help voters in Utah understand the importance of everyone registering as a Republican. Mm-hmm. What are your thoughts on that? Just because the Republican Party, it's a closed system for those who would want to vote for primary, mm-hmm. for the primaries. If you're not registered Republican, you don't get to vote for the primary candidates
Correct.
In the Republican Party, mm-hmm. which I know some states do it that way. Some states don't. So give us a quick kind of overview of what you and the Summit County Republicans think about mm-hmm. that, call to action. Everybody register as a Republican so you can have a say in the primary. And his point also being that the primary is it's the real general election when it comes to Utah voting, that November doesn't matter so much.
It's an interesting thought. I think that if you're going to be completely transparent and honest, it's not really the way to go. If you're registered as a Democrat or another party and you just register as a Republican just to get involved or to push your own agenda and you don't espouse the principles of the party, then you're not being very honest. So that's my first comment there. If you do espouse the principles of the Republican Party and agree with the platform, then you're more than welcome to join in and register as part of the party and be involved.
Yeah.
But to be a member of a different party just to jump in, then it doesn't seem to be very honest.
Yeah, I could appreciate that. Brantley Eason, thank you for coming in this morning.